Sonny Red on alto sax opening up his own composition, Bluesville. It's from his 1960 album, Out of the Blue, which also features Wynton Kelly on piano, Paul Chambers on double bass, and Roy Brooks on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm the one, the only, the incomparable Eutrice Lead. Obviously, you're not supposed to take that all so seriously. You're supposed to have a sense of humor, which is what I do. I laugh at myself all the time. I figure, look, other people are doing it. So they're laughing at me. I might as well head them off at the pass. Well, today I have the joy and privilege of reintroducing ourselves to a very unusual man we had talked with some time ago, but a lot happened in between time. We'll catch up on that today as we update the story of the life of the Reverend Edward Pinckney, who years ago took on a big fight, a huge battle, in fact, to save a community, a predominantly black, predominantly poor community of Benton Harbor, a small city in Michigan, to save this city from a corporate and governmental conspiracy to rid the city of its undesirable population by hiking taxes and doing some other atrocious things, and give the vacated land, hopefully that was the plan. The plan, if it were to work perfectly, it would have these folks getting so fed up they'll move out, or they would stay, but they won't be able to afford to stay, and they'll move out. And in which case, the land on which their homes were built would become available. And that's exactly what the Whirlpool Corporation wants. It wants, it's headquartered in Benton Harbor, right in the middle of all this poverty, which it doesn't do very much about. And what it wants to do is to just get more and more land, to acquire more and more land. They want to build a fantastic golf course for their executives and other, you know, friends and other people. Maybe even Donald Trump could come by and they'll take in a couple of rounds. And this has been his fight. And a lot has happened in the course of waging this war, along with thousands of people in that region and even outside of it. But I have to say, it's a joy to talk with you after such a while. And I'm so glad that you're back home. And I welcome you once again to Lead Stories so we can catch up.
Let me say, I want to thank you so much for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to be on your show. And I love the way your introduction was. I couldn't have done it better myself, and I'm living it. And I said, it is tremendous, tremendous, tremendous. But before we get into me, I want to say something for all the women that's all over the country. We have a problem here in Barron County, Michigan, where over 50 women have been sexually abused, tortured, and made to dance naked in front of their cameras, and have not been, not one single deputy had got arrested. Over 25 ladies have filed civil suits against them. They have the evidence to support how these deputies torture these women, and yet they refuse to even indict anyone arrest anyone. Three of them lost their jobs, but I'm talking about three out of maybe 30 officers that we're talking about. And they have just no respect for women, you see. And if you don't respect anything else, you got to respect women because they are the one who bring our children and brought ourselves into this world. And yet and still, we have learned not to respect the women at all. And the torture that they would do, even when they got out of jail, you had four or five officers parking on their street on the corner waiting for them and late at night shining their light inside their home. Yet, no arrests. Not one single deputy been arrested. And we sit here and say that we live in a civilized country. It just makes no sense how they disrespect our women, no law for them at all, and getting away with it. It's disgraceful. That's in Barron County, Michigan. And I'm talking about the sheriff's department itself. I don't know how high it goes up. You know, these women didn't mention judges or prosecutors or anything like that. They did mention how they used to make them get naked, buck naked, and dance in front of the camera. If they didn't dance, they would either taser them or do something like that horrible to them. So it's a lot of stuff coming out, and you can verify what I'm saying. There have been several lawsuits. More than 25 women have filed lawsuits against Barron County, and not one single officer has been arrested. So I just want to give you that, and I just want your listeners to know about Barron County, and we have to learn to respect our women at all times. And anytime you don't, then you don't. The women don't have the problem. You got the problem. So I'm excited today. I'm excited to be on your show. Just to hear some of the stuff that goes on. But let me start by saying that I'm the type of guy who believes, you know, I fight for people who don't have the courage to fight for themselves and their children. That's why I fight. And I believe everybody should have a legacy, and your legacy should be your children, you know, that you brought up, that you have protected and kept them from doing, being in trouble, being in jail, being in prison, and by this administration that's here today, because anybody can go to prison today. As a matter of fact,
that's where you've been for a couple of years now. Could we start there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Could we start there, Reverend Pinckney? Where have you been, and why have you been there?
Well, I've been in prison for 30 months. The judge sent me 30 months to 10 years. And it all started here, right here. We did a recall of the mayor, James Hightower, who was a puppet for Whirlpool Corporation. And we were successful at getting twice the amount of signatures that we needed. And Whirlpool put a rabbit out of the hat. They knew that this mayor was about to lose by a landslide. So they had to do something to stop this election. So they came up with the idea that we'll charge Reverend Pinckney with forgery on a recall petition. And basically, there is no such charge. You can look it up. They charged me on the 168.937, which is a penalty for forgery, not a crime, because there is no crime of forgery on a recall petition. It might be on a forgery on other petition, but not on a recall petition, because the signature is no good. All you do is cross it out. Okay, anyway, let me go further. On April the 24th, which is my wife's birthday, and I'm taking her out to dinner. And here's the thing. My wife is always late. But on this specific day, my wife was on time. And I applaud her for that. Because if not, we'd have been in handcuffs. She would have missed her dinner. Anyway, we're traveling up to Kalamazoo. On our way up there, the phone is jumping off the hook. People is calling, telling me that the SWAT team has my home surrounded. A SWAT team.
Why is a SWAT team surrounding your home?
So that was the question I asked. I said, what are they doing surrounding my home? And they answered, you should know that. I said, I have no idea. I said, who they want? They said, they want you. I said, why? You know, so they had the whole block blocked off. If you at home, you can't come out. You know, and you can't go into your own home. All because of a recall petition. They was looking for me. But here's the deal. Once I left, me and my wife finished eating dinner. I went to my attorney's office. And he called the prosecutor. And he told them that we have a warrant for Reverend Pinckney arrest. 5 counts of forgery. 6 counts of letting somebody sign the petition twice. Like, I want someone to sign the petition twice, and the signature, both of them would be no good, which makes no sense. So anyway, they decided that they wanted me that night. They had the SWAT team going all over the community looking for me. A SWAT team. You know the cost of a SWAT team? I mean, just for a recall petition, going all over the city trying to find me. And my attorney told him, well, you won't get him today. He's going to turn himself in on Monday. But it was Thursday then. But the very next day, I went and turned myself in. And they set bond at $30,000 for a recall petition, which makes no sense. Well, anyway, we had a preliminary examination. And they produced absolutely no evidence. And this is what the judge said. He said, have to have evidence at the preliminary examination. All you have to know that there was a crime committed and somebody did it. So they bonded me over on like that, which make no sense also. Then they had the trial started on my birthday. Now remember this, the SWAT team came on my wife's birthday. But on my birthday, they started the trial. And a week later, this all-white jury had convicted me with absolutely no evidence. It would have been impossible for them to have evidence that I forged a signature on the recall petition. Actually, they said I changed the date. Especially if you didn't do it. It's not even possible to have evidence to say that you did something that you know that you didn't do, and they knew I didn't do it. But the point was, this all-white jury found me guilty on all 5 counts of forgery. The judge sentenced me to 30 months in prison to 10 years. Now, I didn't have to get out in 30 months. They could have kept me for 10 whole years, which is so amazing when you sit down and think about this. Nobody will believe this because for a recall petition, they send the SWAT team out to your home. And then they give you 30 months in prison, the 10 years, all on for a recall petition. Anyway, they shot me all the way up to Marquette, which is 500 miles from my home. They only had one intention there. That was to do bodily harm to me. Soon as I got there, they accused me of making a 3-way call. And they cut the phone off for 180 days. Now, remember, I'm over 500 miles from my home. They had one intention there, and that was to stop me at all costs. And my intention was to stop them at all costs. So we were in a battle. Then they came up with the idea, one of the guys from Detroit flew up to meet me, to see me in prison up there in Marquette. And he was taking notes. And when he got ready to leave, they stopped him. They told him they wanted his notes. And he wouldn't give them the note, but he said he could make a copy of them. And, you know, if that's what you want. When they made the copy of them, I'm in prison. They had me arrested in prison and taken to the hole. And during the process, I'm in the hole. And here's what they said I did.
In the hole means you're in solitary confinement.
That is correct. I'm in solitary confinement, which is a very, very, very dangerous place to be because they can do whatever they want to you, and nobody will say anything. And one of the things about being in prison, most people who are not in prison don't care anything about the people that's in prison unless they're related to them. But I changed that. Here's what happened. They charged me with smuggling. Listen closely. Smuggling. Because they couldn't spell smuggling. They were saying that the notes that which I had, we were trying to smuggle something, but they gave them permission to take notes. So they said that I was smuggling. And I mean, and even today when you sit down and think about it, it's such an incredible thing. And this would have kept me in a level 5, maybe not even be home at this time if they would have found me guilty of this. But they were shooting for it. So the very next day, there was a big protest up there. They were saying, free Pinckney, free Pinckney. And the news media had got a hold of it. They had a picture of me all over the TV and stuff like that. Reverend Pinckney is in prison, and they have taken away his phone privileges. Now they're trying to get him confined to level 5. And hear what they said. They said he was charged with smuggling. And they said that over the TV, you know. And it's funny now, but it wasn't funny then. You know,
not funny at all. Not yeah. funny at all. But you know,
absolutely. And they were saying that, you know, now that I'm going to the warden had told them that I will be placed in a level 5 for the duration of my time. You know, because they knew that they was going to find me guilty. You know, but they didn't understand. Nobody, I don't know how to smuggle. I'm gonna have to be truthful with you. And when they accused me of smuggling, the first thing that came to my mind, I don't know how to smuggle, you know? And the judge came. They called this guy judge, but he's just a hearing officer. And in prison, the hearing officer always sides with the correctional officer. So in this case, I goes in and talk with him, and the first thing comes out of my mouth that you got to dismiss this. And he said, he looking at me like I'm nuts. He said, why? I said, I don't know how to smuggle. He said, smuggle? I said, yeah, they charged me with smuggling. And he looked at it, he said, smuggle? I said, yeah. And then he dropped a bomb on me. He told me this. He said, I don't care nothing about no evidence. Evidence don't mean nothing to me. When you inside the prison system, it's what we say. That's what counts. We don't go by evidence here. Blew my mind. So I looked at him dead in his eye, and he said, I go by how I feel. And I told him, you look like you feel pretty good today. And he said, well, I'll let you know at 4:30, my answer to this. And 4:30 came around, came out. Everybody anticipating they're going to find me guilty. They gave me the answer, 8:30, not guilty. And the whole place went up, and they was like cheering like we had won the Super Bowl or something. Everybody was so happy, you know, black and white, you know. It was everybody was happy, and they was mad. They was angry, upset, and they figured they had to do something. But now they was gunning for me now. One of the officers, I was walking down the hall, and he tried to bump my arm. If I would have bumped his arm, he would have charged me with assault. And then he had his hand on his taser, and he said, he told me, he said, I almost got you. Yeah, because I jumped up against the wall to make sure that I didn't touch him, because I saw it in his eyes more than anything else. And that kind of saved me from doing things that normally don't get done. But I created me a little army there. But here's something else that I was doing.
But I want to get quickly, Reverend Pinckney, to the very, very important background leading up to your imprisonment.
Okay.
And that is, in Benton Harbor, You took on a huge fight, not just you, but there's no question that you provided the electricity behind the community's protests against Whirlpool. And by then it was clear that there was something in the making by Whirlpool to put its hands on a large tract of land currently occupied, but the feeling was that Whirlpool, being, I suppose, the largest company in Benton Harbor, that the company felt it deserved special attention. And the special attention it wanted was all this land to build a golf course. When you found out what was happening, you started organizing the community, staging many protests, and it extended itself. These protests extended themselves to people in the local government who were co-conspiring with Whirlpool in this horrible plan to just drive the people out and take over the land. Could you tell us a bit about that and how you became Benton Harbor's public enemy number one?
Well, number one, we got a park here called Gene Clark Park that was given to us in the name of this guy, Mr. Clark's daughter. And it says that it belongs to the residents of Benton Harbor and to be used by the residents of Benton Harbor. So Whirlpool Corporation decided that they was going to use the 6th, 7th, and 8th hole for their Jack Nicklaus signature golf course. And we said no. Absolutely not. So here they came up with a plan. One of the plan was that if they cut your water off for any reason, then they put a condemned sign on your house, and they come and take your house. If you have children, they report you to DHS, and they come and take your children. And a whole 3-4 square block, they start overcharge water rates and stuff like that, and they start condemning these homes to build this Jack Nicklaus golf course. When Jack came, they had dumped a whole lot of garbage in the park that morning, and we said no, that they had put it there. The news media said it was there all along, so they kind of like believed that. But we was fighting to keep this stuff from happening because we did not want to lose the residents that lived inside Benton Harbor for the last 25, 30 years, and then for them to put this Jack Nicklaus signature golf course not only in our park but also on our beach. So we continue to fight with them. We recall another recall of one of the commissioners who was the head honcho, and here's what happened there. We went out and got and defeated him with the absentee ballot. And they were so upset that once again, they came out and arrested me. They accused me of paying people $5 to vote because they said that is the only way possible that we could have beat this guy, Glenn Yarborough. But unfortunately, we beat him fair and square. But they overturned the election, put him back in his seat, and they couldn't stand it. But the very next election, this guy lost by a landslide. And that's how we was rolling, even though I had been arrested again. But my point is, this is how I keep becoming enemy number one, because any time that there's a recall, we're always involved. Me, my wife, the community, we're fighting for justice for all. And they do not like that kind of thing. They figure if we put you in jail once, that's enough to scare you. But that don't scare us. You know, we still continue to fight. But here's another thing. They brought the emergency manager. The emergency manager was under Public Act 72. It was strictly for finance then. Then they came up with Public Act 436. which was even more important because it gave him absolute power that the emergency manager can come in. He's a non-elected official. He can fire an elected official. First time in history. You never hear about an elected official ever being fired, terminated from a job. But in this case, this mayor came in, the emergency manager came in and took his desk and put it in the basement. His desk, took over his office, put a padlock on all the commissioners' office, and they couldn't even use the office. Now, this is done by an emergency manager. And it was appointed by the government, the governor, Governor Snyder. Well, it started with Governor Granholm. She started with Public Act 72. So they supersized it so this guy can have more power. So that was a real fight. But we got rid of two emergency managers, but they took over everything. They almost destroyed the whole city, and they helped to drive other African-Americans completely out of the city. It was a battle. It was a battle that we will never forget, but the end result was that we got rid of the emergency manager.
What is it about Benton Harbor and places like Flint and others that repeatedly under attack by some part of the government or the other? What do you think it is all about?
Well, one of the things about Benton Harbor, they want to use Benton Harbor as a testing ground. The main objective is Detroit. That's what they were shooting for. But they want to see how the public will react to a community like Benton Harbor, a community that at probably 90% now African-American, but at that time was maybe 96-97%. African-American, and they figured that with unemployment here well over 60%, and the poverty rate, which nobody ever talk about, you know, you got 80% of the people living below the poverty level, and nobody talking about that, because everybody, it takes 24 hours to try to survive in this town to feed your family, and they know that. You don't have time to discuss what's going on in government. And they know that. That's why they utilized their talent and kept everybody off base doing things that normally you would not accept. And they used the city of Benton Harbor. It started with them. We were the very first one to get this new emergency manager who had absolute power. And it was so amazing that we went out and took care of this, got it repealed, and then they came up with a new public act that supersized that one. We went out and got over 175,000 signatures all over the state of Michigan. And we also won in the election on this issue. Now, this people don't understand. This takes some work for this. This is no ordinary, when you're talking about 175,000 signatures, you know, you're talking about something. And this is what we went out and did, and we also won on the ballot. But that meant nothing to the Governor Snyder. He went out and overrode all that with a new public act that gave the emergency manager even more power. And you know, most people don't talk about that because now it's been swept underneath the rug, because that was one of the biggest things that you could ever imagine. Because when they come in, they do that. See, Flint problem was the emergency manager. You understand the water problem that Flint is having right now. They actually was poisoning the people, knowing that they didn't have to. And now what they want to do now, they want to recall the mayor in Flint, Michigan, because $500 million has been delegated to that area, and they don't want her to be in charge of because she's an African-American. That's a lot of money for them to fix those pipes and fix that water. But they keep saying that the water at this stage is good enough to drink, but not good enough to shower in. So you tell me.
Reverend Pinckney, when you look over the last couple years of your life, what made you say, well, I got to keep this going? Rather than walk away, throw your hands up and walk away and go someplace where you can get a little condo or a little house and settle down with your wife and live your few years that you have left in relative comfort and not even worry about anything anymore. But you stuck to it. And in the face of, well, I have to say, lack of support from the clergy community, lack of support from the so-called middle class, lack of support from people who just didn't see that there could possibly be a victory here, but they'll have to work for it. And they were not in the mood to work for it. What was it that kept you going? Because you were all over the country with this.
You know, you're absolutely correct. And I believe, you see, that justice will be served. And I believe that we're winning, you see. And I cannot stop this fight right now because I know how they think. They think that they had buried me, that Pinckney would never, ever, ever be back. This is where they thought, that Pinckney, we got him just where we want him. We done drained him financially, paying an attorney $40,000, $50,000 to defend me. And they knew that this is the end, that Pinckney is smart enough not to come and try to do the same thing. But here's what they did. See, they thought that they had buried me, but they only planted me. You see, they thought that I would never, never be black. But when you bury somebody, you don't expect him to come back. But when you plant him, you expect him to rise again. And that's what I have done. They didn't bury me. They only planted me. And I'm back, and I'm feeling good, and I believe that we're going to win, and it's all about the people. You see, I'm not motivated by money. I'm not motivated by a materialistic thing. I believe that we are winning this battle, and I believe we can. Because anytime they're willing to go to these drastic changes to stop you, to destroy you, then you're still winning the game because they don't have to do it. They can just kick me to the curb and say, let it be. But no, they want to fight with me. They want to go chest to chest, toe to toe, eyeball to eyeball with me, and I'm ready for them. I'm excited about it. Matter of fact, that's what keeps me living every day, knowing that this fight will continue and it's all about the people.
Well, let's take a little break, and we'll come back so that people could ask you questions directly at 888-874-4888 to talk to Reverend Edward Pinckney, who is still fighting the fight. As I said, they didn't bury him. They planted him. And next thing you know, there are new branches and a lot of growth going on. But I just wanted personally to show my appreciation for the fact, because people did call, and people who had been covering Detroit, in fact, told me that you were back. And I said, oh, that's the greatest news, and we better spread it as far and wide as we possibly can. So 888-874-4888 if you want to talk to Reverend Edward Pinckney. We'll take a very short break and come back to your questions. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. Our guest today is the Reverend Edward Pinckney, who had been away. He was imprisoned for about 2.5 years, although he was threatened with a 10-year sentence for basically committing, he was alleged to have committed to have tampered with absentee ballots. Of course, there was no evidence to that. We did cover the trial. You know Abba Yomi Ezekwe, and he had been filing reports even while you were in the courts. So we have kept an eye on you. 888-874-4888. A serious question, Reverend Pinckney, about what happens in the meantime to your spiritual work. What are you doing about that?
That is continuing. Right now, I'm not in a church because while I was gone, we had people actually taking over and doing the things we need to be done. I'm not ready yet to go back inside, but I'm in the community now. My job right now, because on July the 11th, we had a tremendous protest at the Barron County Courthouse. And also at Whirlpool, we hit the Barron County Courthouse and Whirlpool both at the same identical time. So right now, absolutely, yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay, great. Sarah, you're on the air with Reverend Edward Pinckney.
Thank you so much, Utrice and Reverend. Pinckney, congratulations to you. Much love and success to you and your wife and family. People have been in your corner for a long time. I am born and bred in Michigan. I do know, but I'm shocked to find out how evil and mean. It's like the devil, but you're strong. Now, there's constitutional rights, and Utrice, you might know of the Amendment Number 8, which says you're not to have cruel and unusual punishment. Putting you in that that hole was cruel and unusual. And then it also says excessive bail shall not be required. And all of that is going against your constitutional rights and my constitutional rights, Utrice's constitutional rights. What do you think about that? And then number 9 says you can't go back and mess up other things. You have those rights.
Absolutely. And far as the cruel and unusual punishment, when you in prison, they do whatever they want to do. Like one of the things that was about to happen, they wanted to taser me. If I would have did anything, if I would have touched them, even by just saying, just trying to get their attention, touching them, that could be charged as assault, and they have the right to taser you. And they wanted to taser me so bad that they didn't know what to do. But I surrounded myself with people who was willing to protect me and my control area, you see, because if they would have planted drugs, or they call it a shank or a knife, homemade, whatever it is, they would have planted. If they said it was in my room and they found it in my cell, then it's mine. And there's nothing I can do about it. And just like when I went before the hearing officer, he told me, we don't need evidence. What are we going to do with evidence? He said he ruled how he feels. So we, the people, have to step up. Taxpayers have to say, look, just all we care about being fair and being honest. If you can be fair and being honest about everything, we won't have to worry about the prisoners, the fight, the killing, and all that stuff inside the prison. Because sometimes the COs, they engineer this stuff to create dissension inside the jail.
Yes. They've been doing that since way back in the Ku Klux Klan age in time. Before you get off, I would like for you to give us a mailing address so that we can mail you some good luck something, okay? Mail it to you. I just hate it because, now, Utrice and Reverend Pinckney, we're seeing the devil. We are seeing and knowing the devil. And I don't want you to walk in there. I don't want you to walk in there. Before
Absolutely.
You do, you get away from it. Here.
Absolutely.
It's a, It was a very good question, Reverend Pinckney. How can people help you?
Well, one of the things you can write a check to Banco, BANCO. That's at 1940 Union Avenue.
1940 what avenue?
Union, like the Union Army.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's Benton Harbor, Michigan.
That's Benton Harbor, like in Harbor, Michigan.
49022. Or if you like, you can always call me at 269-925-0001.
Repeat that last part again, please.
269.
Uh-huh.
925.
Oh, 925. Mm-hmm.
0001.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
So let me say it again. 269-925-0001.
And it's to be in your name?
Yes. You said it to Banco.
Oh, we put Banco's name on the check?
Yes, please.
All right. Yes, and don't go in. That gives them too much pleasure if you walk into that jail. Don't go in there. And stay away. Well, there's many places that'll take you in South America, too. All right.
I know. And you know one thing? I have continued my court watching. I was court watching this morning, but I knew that I had to be home at 1 o'clock today. You see, I don't care what's going on inside this courthouse. I have to be at my house at 1 o'clock to get this phone call to be on this wonderful show.
Yes, indeed. She is a darling, darling lady.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. Thanks for your call. Khalil from North Carolina, you're on the air with Reverend Edward Pinckney.
Reverend Pinckney, it is so nice to hear your voice, and we are also proud of you, if that's the correct word. And it's just amazing. I remember when Utrice had you on all those weeks and you predicted exactly what would happen in Detroit. You were the only one who told it. You told it. And my question, I was telling everybody and it made you disappear, but I didn't forget. I made other people not forget. But my question is that what is going on with that disgusting, rotten, rancid food that they are feeding prisoners?
Well, now, here's the deal about that. Now, I didn't get to that part, but next time I come on, Utrice, I will tell you about the protest that we had in reference to the food, because one of the things that people always say, that when you inside the prison system, they control the prison, but the prisoners actually can control their own destiny just by working together and coming together. I put together one of the best protesters inside the prison system because I had everybody, only 46 people went to chow. That was so incredible that it never happened here before. And who you think they want to blame? The warden want to blame me. A nice guy like me, they want to blame me for it.
They wanted to blame you for feeding people food with maggots in it, right?
They wanted to say that you're the one leading this protest against this nasty, filthy food with the maggots and the potato worms and the bugs. And you know what they do when they serve you food that has bugs, and they say we're just giving you some extra meat. That's what they'll say. And remember this, they get away with this stuff. And ain't no such thing as, I'm going to report this to the warden, or I'm going to report it to the director of the Department of Prisons. That stuff don't work, because when you tell them, all they're going to do is retaliate against you.
Reverend Pinckney, from your experience, from this recent experience of yours, which I know caused a great deal of harm to you. But what would you advise people as being the most important thing they can do for themselves?
One thing we have to come together. When we have to come together, unification is the number one thing, because the same thing that was happening inside the prison system, they was trying to keep everybody divided. My job was to bring everybody together, and I beat them down while I was there on that issue. Because I believe that when you're in prison, we have a common goal. When you out here in the world, you have a common goal, but you have to sit down and decide how far are you willing to go. Because a lot of times, people will not speak up unless it's something happening to them right now. So we have to say, it's not about you. It's not about you. It's not about Reverend Pinckney. It's about the future. It's the future of our children and our children's children. That's what we got to stand up and fight for today. We cannot continue at the rate we're doing now, being divided. That's how they don't have to do no fighting. It's divide and conquer. You fight against each other. They got black people fighting against black people fighting against white people, Mexicans fighting against Puerto Ricans. They got all this going on because they don't have to do no fighting now, because we're doing all the fighting for them. But listen, that's what we have to do. We have to unify. And it should be done at all costs. And people sit around here and think that, you know, we have to like each other to work with each other. You don't have to like me for me to work with you. To me, that's not important. That's the least important thing. We got a problem. Let's solve this problem. And let's work together on that issue. We have to learn to work together. That's the bottom line. And that's the only way we're going to defeat these people. We cannot do it individually. And that's a promise.
I think that's a profound lesson, and we talk about that all the time. We have to find common ground on things that we can work together on. David, you're on the air with Reverend Edward Pinckney.
Reverend Pinckney, for the work that you have done, what's going in my mind right now is that how is it that your case was not taken for appeal? Because if they made up this conviction and got these people to convict you in a jury, why wouldn't a higher court throw out such a ridiculous conviction? What happened?
I'm so glad you asked. The Court of Appeal, the first step, they rule. Here's what their ruling was. There is no evidence that Pinckney did it. But it's obvious by him being the leader, and a leader that he is, he must have told someone to do it, so we are not going to reverse. Matter of fact, if you take the time out and look, I don't have the case number before me, but if you call me, I'll look up the case number for you. So you can read the opinion of the Court of Appeal. But here's the good news. The Supreme Court is interested in my case. They made the prosecutor send them a brief. I believe it's going to be overturned. But on the issue of insufficiency of evidence, they refuse to hear that. Because they said that the jury made a decision and it's final. But there's no such charge as forgery on a recall petition. If a signature is bad, all they do is cross it out. They charge me with the penalty rather than a crime. And that's what the Supreme Court is going to hear. Also, they talked about me being an activist all through the trial, that I was a black activist, but you didn't have to tell the jury I was black. They could look at me and see that I was black. But they kept saying he's a black activist all through the transcript. And then we had 26 professors from all over the country, the University of Chicago, University of Michigan, Cooley Law School, Wayne State Law School, Northwestern out of Chicago, University, all these places. These professors read the transcript and said, this is the most ungodly transcript that they have ever heard and ever read. And what I was trying to do, to allow them to teach their law students about the system itself and just be honest that the system is not, it doesn't really it's not justice for black people, let's put it that way, because this is the evidence to support it. And you could say maybe three or four law professors or law university looked at it, but when you're talking about 26, and they all came to the same conclusion, all of them had different, and they all said the very same thing, and now the Supreme Court want to hear it, we'll see. That's how I look at it.
I see. When you talk about the Supreme Court, are you referring to the United States Supreme Court or a local Supreme Court in Michigan?
The local Supreme Court in Michigan. They are the ones who, matter of fact, it was big news all over the newspaper here. It was even in the Detroit newspaper, Pinckney. Supreme Court want to hear Pinckney case. But the reality of the thing, the insufficiency of evidence is what I thought that it would be reversed on. But unfortunately, the Court of Appeals said that I must have told someone to do it. There's no evidence to support that, but yet in their opinion, they stated it. So, yes. I did the 30 months now. So only thing I can do is move on. I can't sit here and dwell on what they're going to do. Either they do or they don't. I'm 68 years old, and it's not going to affect me one way or another whether I get a job or not, you see.
Yes.
So, and I don't care what they say, what they do. I'm going to continue to fight because it's the right thing to do.
Well,
absolutely.
Thank you for that question, and thank you for the answer. As we wrap up, Reverend Pinckney, once again, I just want to say it was such good news to hear that you're out and about again and causing the good kind of trouble in Benton Harbor. So one last question, and that is, what's going on with Whirlpool itself, knowing that you have it in the crosshairs, you coming for them?
Oh, here's what's happening. This is really interesting. The income tax, that is one of the main reasons why I was sent to prison in the first place. And back in 2014, we put the income tax on the ballot. Last Monday, the commissioner, since I'm home, and they had agreed to put the income tax back on the ballot, and Whirlpool is angry. They're upset. They just had a fire in London where a Whirlpool appliance caused a fire that killed 79 people. And right now, Whirlpool is having its worst trouble. We just protested in front of Whirlpool on July the 11th. We had a tremendous protest. All the employees was looking out the window. They was telling everybody, don't look at them, don't encourage them. But, hey, look, we're going to come again and again and again because it's only fair and it's only right. You know, to me, it's so simple. Just do the right thing. If you
to wrap
taxes,
up, I'm sorry. We have to wrap up. We're running out of time.
But
be sure that we'll come back to this discussion and get into some fine details or even finer details that will give you the opportunity to get a bit deeper into what we need to understand about this case. But thank you so much for being with us today, Reverend Pinckney. So appreciate it.
And thank you, Latrice. Thank you for having me. And anytime that you have time available, if you want me, you call me. I promise you I will stop my court watching, and I will be at home at 1 o'clock.
All right. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can reach me via email at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.